I mean, one of Manchester's, I wouldn't say best kept secrets, because I think an awful lot of people know about it locally and internationally, but it's one of those mysterious places that it seems to be off the established tourist rota, roll call of places in Manchester, probably because it's not so obvious. We're doing an audio booth for Creative Tourist here. My name's Jonathan Schofield, and I'm with Michael Powell, the librarian of Cheetham's Library. Michael, what is this place?
Well, it's the oldest public library in the country. It's set up by Humphrey Cheetham in the 1650s as a public library, and it's carried on ever since. That's what it does.
What do you mean by public, in that it's non-subscription, it's not...
Yeah, you don't pay. There are no members. People come in, they use it. They use it as a reference library. They come in, they look stuff up, they work here, and off they go. And it's always been that, from 1653.
It's in an older building, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the building itself is one of Manchester's real few medieval buildings. This is a 1421 building, so really, for Manchester, this is as old as you get. And it's the accommodation for the clergy of what's known Manchester Cathedral.
And it's been free and public since the 1650s.
Yeah.
And what sort of... describe the collection, maybe.
Well, at first it's a general public library, but a very much an academic collection. So it's very good in theology, law, medicine, science, history. And it's really trying to meet sort of needs of educated, the clergy, the lawyers, the doctors. That's what it's trying to do. Almost like a university library does.
And you've got some really valuable works here, are famous in their own right, haven't you?
Yeah, well, it just buys the stuff that you'd expect. Yeah. It does buy a first edition of Newton's Principia. You know, you do get other copies of that elsewhere. There's one at the Ryans. But the copy here, for example, is bought for the library, for Manchester, for 7 shillings and 6 pence, you know, as a brand new book. So it differs from the others.
Apparently it's 10 shillings now.
Yeah, well, it had been remaindered anywhere.
Yeah, and you've got a Plato signed by Ben Jonson, the playwright.
Yeah, so some of the books that they bought are important, not because, you know, of what they are, although the sort of 3-volume Plato is important, but that's one that Ben Jonson signed, or there's others that they bought. And then when you open them up, there's one, for example, works of Prosper of Aquitaine, which cost 8 shillings. When they looked at this, they realised this is Henry VIII's copy.
Personal copy. Yeah. Fabulous. And it's not just, of course, the... it's everything. To me, it's a complete package, Cheetham's. The good thing about it as well, it's still a working library, it's still functioning, and it's been functioning all that time. It's not a museum, it's not a stately home that doesn't really have any life of its own. It's still a properly functioning building. I'm looking across here and seeing two people who are doing research right now. But we're sat in an alcove in the reading room here with a very famous table, I would imagine, for people who like politics. Do you want to describe the space we sat in?
Yeah, this is the nicest bit of the reading room, I think. This little alcove with windows all round, so it's very bright. And it has a 1650s table and a bench round it. And this is the table that Karl Marx used, and Engels. That Engels was in Manchester for a long time, 20-odd years, working for his father's mill. And in 1845, Marx made his first visit, and they work here. And they work here, I think, because it's the nicest bit. Yeah. It's bright and it's, you know, they can talk like we're doing. It's easy without really disturbing the rest. And Marx read sort of economic books. It's the shift in Marx from reading Hegel philosophy to actually reading economics. So he starts that work here.
And so, well, I mean, it always makes my jaw drop in a way that the fathers of communism, his whole world ideology, sat here and did their work to a city that was largely unknowing of them. They were like anonymous people that just happened to be here imagining a future of the world that was different from the one they had. And you have had lots of people from all over, haven't you, come to visit, almost as a pilgrimage, this place.
Yeah, we still do. We're the Chinese in particular. You know, we've had the mayor of Beijing coming, the ambassador. Whenever there's a new ambassador, they bring the ambassador up to sit at this desk.
And you get the books out, presumably.
And we get the books out, and they handle the books. They get to, well, which you can still read the same books that Karl Marx read, you know, which is quite nice.
So that must really stir them all. I mean, that must be an immense thing.
Well, I think the Chinese these days think of themselves more as capitalists than communists, but, you know, officially they pay lip service to it, at least.
And it's not just, I mean, Marx and Engels is big enough for that memory is big enough for any building. I mean, it contains such resonance, but you've had other well-known personalities sitting in this room or around this table, haven't you?
Well, exactly. The thing is, we know that Marx and Engels sit at this table because Engels wrote to Marx saying, I've revisited the four-sided desk. But, or if on one of the other chairs, Benjamin Franklin worked here, John Wesley worked here, Daniel Defoe sat here, Charles Dickens sat here. Going before it's a library, this room is the bedroom of John Dee when John Dee is Warden of Manchester. So, you know, those looking for the opera this year's festival, you know, can always come along here and see where Dee lives.
So with Daniel Defoe, you've also got Damon Albarn then who's come along.
Damon Albarn was here a few weeks ago. Before him, I suppose the most famous was Rowan Williams, Archbishop of Canterbury, who managed to make a 10-minute visit last over an hour as he went. He got the keys and went through the bookcases.
Absolutely fantastic. And how can we know it's open to the public. You've said that right at the beginning of this interview. How do people get into here? How can they book into here?
Well, you can look at the website and give us a ring or email us, and that will get you the right to look at material. Yeah. You know, look at what we've got on the web. If you just want to visit, it's a good idea to phone up, but you can come in off the street during normal opening hours and have a quick look
around. But it's Monday to Friday, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And what sort of collection have you got now that might be useful for people who are researching things? It's basically, you're now buying stuff relevant to the northwest of England, really, aren't you?
Yeah, we shifted from sort of older books towards more sort of local history some time ago, but we did it 150 years ago, so... from the 1850s, we specialised in history, and we do have a huge collection on Manchester. It's and the neighbouring
towns. All the newspapers, all the magazines.
Yeah, you know, the nice thing is that they're still in the original condition. If you want to read the first copy of the Guardian, we get the first copy of the Guardian open rather than looking it on film. So it's a nice place to work.
Listen, Michael, every time I come in here, like I say, it's just one of the most astonishing places, not just in Manchester, anywhere in the United Kingdom, because it has that duality of not only being historical and important historically, but still doing what it was meant to do back in the 1650s. So thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thanks.